From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Grand Canyon inspires awe. It's been called America's natural cathedral. Don't touch it, said Teddy Roosevelt. Not a cottage, not a hotel, nothing. Man can only mar it, he said. Now there are plans for a bunch of new development at the canyon and lots of pushback. This hour on Point, the fight, the uproar over developing the Grand Canyon. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Would you put up more housing, shops, a cable car ride to the bottom, a restaurant on Navajo sacred ground? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Later this hour, a different kind of monument, New Yorker writer Roger Angel on Yankee shortstop Derek Jeter's final season. But first, to the Grand Canyon. Joining me now from Flagstaff, Arizona, is Kevin Fedarko, author of The Emerald Mile, the story of an epic navigation of the Colorado River at the bottom of the canyon, a former river guide at the Grand Canyon and senior editor for Outside Magazine. He wrote A Cathedral Under Siege in the New York Times last month. Kevin, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here.
So you know the Grand Canyon pretty well and for a long time. Describe your relationship with the canyon to us.
Well, my relationship is based on spending essentially six seasons at the bottom of the canyon, what we call the world below the rims, floating the river as part of a commercial raft guiding crew. And that experience took me across the arc of entire seasons inside the canyon and enabled me to come to know it at a fairly intimate level. When you spend time floating through that environment, it's a world that's framed by mile-high walls of unimaginably ancient rock. It changes your sensibilities. It has a deep impact on your sense of perspective, I think, about the place that human beings occupy, both in the world and in time. And I think what I'm speaking about right now, what I'm referencing, are aspects of this particular piece of landscape which are responsible for qualifying it as, I think, the most iconic piece of landscape that we have here in the United States, and a place that holds a unique and superlative position within the context of America's national park system. This is really the crown jewel of the park system.
Teddy Roosevelt stood there in 1903, and he, of course, would be the one who put this off limits, who got that status for it. And in his speech on the South Rim, he said, "I want to ask you to do one thing in connection with it. In your own interest and in the interest of the country, keep this great wonder of nature as it is now." Roosevelt said, "I hope you will not have a building of any kind, not a summer cottage, a hotel, or anything else to mar the wonderful grandeur, the sublimity, the great loneliness and beauty of the canyon. Leave it as it is. You cannot improve on it. The ages have been at work on it, and man can only mar it." It's not as if there's nothing there now, but by and large, that has been the approach to the Grand Canyon, Kevin.
That's correct. And I think, you know, some recognition has to be given to the job that the National Park Service has done in protecting this. And you're correct. I mean, there are pieces of infrastructure within the canyon. There are two very narrow metal footbridges at the very bottom. There's a place called Phantom Ranch where people can stay overnight. This is where the mule trains that come down off of the South Rim each day conclude their journey. But the place is remarkably pristine, and one of the signature attributes of a trip through the bottom of the Grand Canyon, regardless of whether you're backpacking, hiking, or on the river, is the feeling of being completely cut off from the world outside. And I think this is one of the reasons why Roosevelt invoked this principle that there are certain places, the Grand Canyon included, which are extraordinarily beautiful and which need to be walled off and protected, because the insights that are to be offered, the experiences that one can open oneself up to within them, are things that are enormously valuable. That value is something that is very difficult to quantify in terms of the metrics of say, economic development. But I think that it's generally agreed upon by most Americans that without these natural wonders, without this park system, we would be much poorer.
I've had a lot of in-laws living in Arizona over the years, and because of that, been lucky enough to spend a good deal of time in and around the Grand Canyon. It is absolutely awe-inspiring. It's also very large. Describe, lay out the sort of the sprawl of it and the development that's being proposed here and pushed. Where is it, and what would it mean?
So, Tom, we're talking about a stretch of the Colorado River that cuts roughly from east to west across the top of northern Arizona. It's a 270-mile stretch of river. It is bookended by and buttressed between two of the largest machines that we've ever created, Hoover Dam at the downstream end and Lake Mead, the reservoir that it creates. And then at the upstream end of the canyon, 15 miles upstream from the entrance to the Grand Canyon, a second dam, a sister dam called the Glen Canyon Dam, mm-hmm. and its reservoir, Lake Powell. The world between those two dams is essentially the world of the Grand Canyon. The rims are roughly a mile apart, although that distance can expand to up to 10 miles, depending on what stretch of the river you're in. And so it helps to think of the in terms of the development in the Grand Canyon, it helps to think of it in terms of east, west, and center. The project that we're talking about today is unfolding on the eastern end of the canyon, and this is an area where the Navajo Reservation, the largest Indian reservation in the United States, directly abuts the border of the canyon.
And we're talking a very large reservation, the upper northeast corner of Arizona, but a big corner.
Oh, huge corner, a corner that comprises approximately size of the state of West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And it abuts right up against this. What's proposed there?
What's being proposed is a group of developers from Scottsdale, led by a man named Lamar Whitmer, have conceived the idea of building a development on the rim of the canyon there, which overlooks an extraordinary part of the canyon known as the confluence. This is where the primary tributary of the Colorado River inside the Grand Canyon, a river known as the Little Colorado, comes into and joins the main stem Colorado. One of the things that makes it so extraordinary is that the Little Colorado, the waters of the Little Colorado, take on an aquamarine color. And it actually feels as if you are experiencing a desert version of the Caribbean when you float up to the point where the waters of these two rivers merge together.
And what would that development be at that spot, Kevin?
The development would consist of building a massive tramway, a cable-driven set of gondola cars, each of which can hold up to eight people. And this cable system would descend from the river approximately 3,200 feet to the floor of the canyon. This is a system that would be capable of delivering up to 4,000 people per day to a very remote spot at the bottom of the canyon, which also happens to hold extraordinary significance for a number of Native American tribes that claim a part of that area, the confluence, as their heritage.
So this would be the first time that you could have mass visitation to the bottom of the canyon in this kind of – I mean, we hear about donkey rides, and you can take helicopter rides. You can go on foot, but this would just zip you down. How long would it take from rim to bottom?
You know, I haven't actually heard what the length of time would be. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Steady stream through the day.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think the significance really resides in the numbers. Mm-hmm. The impact, you can imagine, of 4,000 people per day would be enormous. The developers are claiming they're going to minimize that impact by channeling those people onto a set of raised walkways, at the end of which, if you can believe this, would be a restaurant. So this is not simply a cable car system, but also a restaurant.
At the bottom of the canyon, at the so-called confluence, which many Navajo see as sacred ground.
That's correct, and not only the Navajo, but also the Hopi, the Zuni, and a number of other tribes, yes.
We'll look at this piece and the other big piece of development that's being pushed here, which is a few thousand new homes near the south rim of the canyon, shopping center and more that would tap into aquifer water there that you and others worry would take the springs out of the canyon.
Right. So now we need to sort of shift our focus about 25 to 30 miles to the west. And we're now talking about a community called Tucson, which is essentially the gateway to the Grand Canyon for the majority of people who visit the place each summer. There's about 4.5 million of them, and this is where they drive to look over that extraordinary vista that we've all seen pictures of from the South Rim. This is a group of developers and financiers primarily from Italy, and through a rather extraordinary set of maneuvers, which include stacking the town council of Tucson, they've managed to gain control of zoning and set up an enormous development right there on the rim.
Kevin, hold the thought. We'll look at what that that development would entail. We're talking this hour about the uproar over whether to bring commercial development, new development, to the Grand Canyon. Kevin Fidarko, author of The Emerald Mile, is with us. Does this sound like a good idea? Is this sacred ground for all Americans now, ground that should be left alone? If we go with the shopping center and gondola ride, do we turn the Grand Canyon into Disneyland? Canyon Reflections from Gordon Burt behind us here. We'll be right back. This is On Point. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. Birds at sunrise in the South Rim Village of the Grand Canyon behind me here. We're talking this hour about the fight, the uproar over whether to bring more commercial development to the Grand Canyon. Thousands of homes, shopping center, gondola ride right to the bottom, restaurant on the Colorado on sacred Navajo ground. There is uproar about it. Here's a little bit of a travel film from the 1950s boasting the wonders of visiting the Grand Canyon.
All along the rim, from one vantage point to another, there are thousands of vistas, different impressions, until the changing aspects of the world's greatest wonder dismay the traveler who comes here expecting to see all the frightful immensity of this phenomenon in a few days. Years would be required to really see the Grand Canyon, and one lifetime scarcely would be adequate.
And at the bottom of that great canyon, the Colorado River. My guest, Kevin Fidarko, knows it well. He worked as a river guide on the Colorado in the Grand Canyon. He's also author of the wonderful book, The Emerald Mile, about an epic transit of that river down the canyon. Joins us today from Flagstaff, Arizona. Kevin, you were just getting into describing at the east end here, we've got the tramway and restaurant at the bottom. Near the south rim would be a significant residential housing development. And what? How big and what more, Kevin?
So, Tom, we're talking about 2,200 homes, 3 million feet of commercial space. And there are also plans to include a dude ranch, what is being described as a European-style health spa, and a shopping center.
Now, I've been through this area. I mean, yes, there's a town there, but it is very small now. It is very Spartan. You have the feeling as you approach the Grand Canyon that, of heading into a very remote zone away from that kind of development.
You do, and I think it's possible to make the argument that in many ways that's appropriate. That's the proper way to approach the Grand Canyon. And a development of this size not only threatens to overwhelm the park itself, but I think sets up something in direct contrast to the values and the ideas and the philosophy that people who know the canyon well feel is one of the most important attributes of going up to and experiencing that place.
Here's a woman reacting to seeing the Grand Canyon for the first time.
Oh, this is gorgeous, isn't it?
Pretty wild.
Unbelievable.
Overwhelming. If you've seen it, you know it. On the other hand, here's developer Lamar Whitmer out of Scottsdale, Arizona, saying he thinks the development project here would keep Navajos on the reservation, create more jobs.
If they're going to
sustain their people and preserve their culture, they have to create some jobs. 50% of the Navajos are living off the reservation now. The ones that stay have one of the most impoverished, if not the most impoverished place in the state.
And so there's an economic argument being made here. There's a resource argument that comes into this as well in the Tusayan development about water. Describe that for us, Kevin.
Well, a development this, of this size, as you can well imagine, is going to require water. And the wells that will need to be tapped will draw water from an aquifer, which is responsible for driving many of the springs on the south side of the canyon in this central area. Now, these are some of the most extraordinary gems within the canyon. If you can imagine, a lot of the world down there is a vast expanse of sun-baked rock. And so coming up upon a spring, an oasis that's filled with life, that's supporting a variety of plants to which animals have to come each morning and each evening. These are signature attributes of the canyon itself, as well as very important sources of water for the Colorado.
Where does the sign-off process on this development stand? The housing and shopping, the cable car, the tramway, where are we in the process of deciding whether or not this happens?
Well, this is, this gets to the question of what the developers have managed to pull off. Most of the decisions rest under the aegis of the U.S. Forest Service, but the developers have succeeded in incorporating this town of Tusayan and then stacking the town council. The six-member town council with a majority of representatives who have direct ties either as employees or as business associates with the corporation that is driving the project. So this essentially places control of a project which could do irreparable harm to the crown jewel of America's national park system in the hands of a group of developers, the majority of whom are not even citizens of this country.
Is it a done deal then, this the Tusayan, the housing and shopping development?
It's absolutely not a done deal. The Park Service is adamantly opposed to it. There are a limited number of tools that the Park Service has at its disposal, but this is an ongoing fight. And I spoke with Dave Ubaraga, the superintendent of Grand Canyon National Park, about a month ago. He indicated to me that he intends to win this fight.
And at the eastern end, the so-called Escalade, the big tramway, that's possible in part because this is in Navajo reservation land. So do the Navajo have the last word on that? And are they? Is there a consensus in the Navajo community?
Well, I think these are questions that some of the other guests who are coming up are going to be speaking to directly. But I can tell you that the Navajo absolutely have the last word with respect to what happens on their land. This is a sovereign nation. They have the right and the ability to make their own decisions. However, this project intrudes upon Grand Canyon National Park, and the idea that they can do what they want within the national park is something that the national park itself and I say I have a feeling pretty much most Americans as well would take objection to. So. This is part of what makes this issue so difficult and so sticky.
Kevin Fidarko, stand by in Flagstaff, Arizona. I want to bring in a couple of members of the Navajo community in Arizona to look at this issue of new development in and around the Grand Canyon. With us from Window Rock, Arizona, is Deswood Tome. He's a special advisor to the president of the Navajo Nation. He's been working with developers to support the Escalade project, the big tramway that would be at the eastern end of the canyon. Deswood Tome, thank you very much for joining us.
Tom, thank you.
And with us from Flagstaff, Arizona, is Renee Yellowhorse, Navajo and part of the group Save the Confluence, who's been opposing the development. Renee Yellowhorse, thank you for being with us today.
Yate, Tom. Hello.
It's great to have you with us. Deswood Tome, what's the argument for bringing in the Escalade, the tramway?
We want to see opportunity for the Navajo Nation to grow in tourism. The Highway 89, which goes from Flagstaff to Page has some 10 million visitors a year, and the Navajo Nation, the Navajo people, see very little of that dollar.
So this would be a way for people to stop off, engage with the canyon via the tramway, and bring revenues into your community, you're saying?
Yes, indeed. Not only revenue, but job opportunity and growth and future expansion.
What would be the development, Deswood, at the top of the tramway and at the bottom? Could you describe those for us?
At the top, we're developing 420 acres with four or five hotels, restaurants, also a discovery center, which is a visitor center, and then vendor stands for the Navajo artisans to be on there for displaying their jewelry and selling their jewelry. On the bottom is simply going to be a self-contained two-way elevated walkway, which will go 14 feet off of the ground.
And this would be along the river or along the canyon wall, Deswood, which?
It'll be 300 feet extending back from the confluence from both the river, the Colorado River, and the Little Colorado River. So there'll be no people that will be down accessing the bottom at all.
And what about, there's been talk of a restaurant down in this area as well. Where does that stand?
It's simply going to be a cantina restaurant, now, like the kind they have in the Grand Canyon. It's not a full-service restaurant. It's just a cantina where you get some hot dogs and chips and stuff like that.
How long would the trip down the canyon take on the Escalade, the tramway?
It's estimated anywhere from 10 to 12 minutes.
And you agree this would take something like, things are booming, 4,000 people a day down and up?
We anticipate up to 10,000 people a day during the peak season.
Wow, that is a remarkable number. Deswood Tone, please stand by in Window Rock. Renee Yellow Horse, you've opposed this development. Why?
Yes, Tom. The families of the Save the Confluence have not been consulted. The traditional and customary land users. My aunties, I have three of them that live in the area. Mm-hmm. They oppose this. They're in their 70s and 80s years of age, and they've survived the Bennett Freeze, which was imposed on the area for over 45 years on development. And our families got together along with other grazing permit holders and people who hold the area dear, not only as their home, but as an area where we do our prayers at the edge of the Grand Canyon and at the over the confluence. And it's not just that area that is sacred. It is the entire canyon to the people that live in the area. And for any development to take place, the first discussions should go to the people that's going to directly affect. And that has not happened. Our questions have not been answered.
Renee Yellow Horse, if I may, Deswood Tome says this will bring jobs. This will benefit the Navajo people. What's your response to that?
I want to ask Deswood what kind of job he's going to offer to my 70, 80-year-old aunties. That's what I'd like to know. They're unskilled. They have no high school education. They just know how to run the cattle on their land and how to live with the sheep and how to live with the land.
You referred to something you described as traditional land users. Is there a difference of opinion within the Navajo community about the sacredness of this site, Renee? Are there subcultures within the Navajo community arguing over this?
Right now, there is a particular divide in the community. Bodyway Gap is from the Little Colorado River on the north side of the bank all the way up to where Marble Canyon is in that area up Highway 89, basically. The people that live along Highway 89 who have had access to electricity, running water, even during the freeze area, they've had those benefits and they've built along those areas. My family, my relatives that live in the Bottaway area have lived without running water, had to haul water, no electricity. And that's how they've survived the freeze that was imposed by the government. And now to bring about a big development out of the way, even if they build the 26-mile road out to the area, it's going to bypass, totally bypass, the communities along Highway 89. All of those 10 million visitors will be taking a detour and then going on without even seeing the rest of the gap of Arizona, Bitter Springs.
Deswood Tome,
so a lot of it should stay there.
Forgive me, Renee, but you know, okay. Renee Yellowstone says, Deswood, this
Yellow
is sacred.
Horse.
Yellow Horse, forgive me, I'm sorry. Yellow Horse says this is sacred land, and this development would be an offense to that status. You have a Navajo background. What do you say to that, Deswood?
Yes, Tom. The development is not going to intrude on any tribal cultural property on site. There'll be a buffer created around the one. Well, first of all, at the bottom, the walkway will be elevated 14 feet off of the ground, so no visitors will be given access down to the river. Whereas now you have at least 23,000 river rafters that actually desecrate that area already down on the bottom. On the top, there's been said that there's a tribal cultural property at the end. We're going to build far back away from that to where that won't be intruded either. As far as the Hopi tribe goes, Sipapu is located 3 miles in another direction, and so there's no intrusion on any tribal cultural property.
Renee, what do you say? There won't be footprints on sacred ground here, so it should be fine, says Deswood.
Actually, the canyon is sacred to more than just the Hopi, more than just the Navajo, more than just the native tribes in the area. It is a sacred, and the solitudeness is respected by the river rafters that go through there, even though they're saying they're desecrating the area. They're very respectful, the ones that we've educated and the ones that have learned in these last years that the confluence is an area that is to be respected. And the more the information gets out there, like into the world, we hear the outcry, leave it pristine, leave it the way it is, leave it the way our great-great-grandchildren will see it. And that is what we're fighting for, not only the sacredness, not only the religiousness of our daily lives. We want it to stay the same for all the people all over the world, not just in America, not just the tribes.
Renee Yellowhorse, Navajo out of Flagstaff, Arizona today with us, and Deswood Tome, same out of Window Rock, Arizona. Please stand by. Kevin Fedarko in Flagstaff, author of The Emerald Mile. We're talking about the fight, the uproar over whether to bring commercial development to the Grand Canyon. South Rim from Nicholas Gunn's Music of the Grand Canyon here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the fight, the uproar over whether to bring new commercial development to the Grand Canyon. Thousands of homes, shopping center, gondola ride to the bottom, and more, right down toward the Colorado there, onto sacred Navajo ground, depending how you look at it. Maybe ground that's sacred to all Americans at this point in a different way. Renee Yellowhorse joins us from Flagstaff, Arizona, Navajo, part of the group Save the Confluence of the Colorado and the Little Colorado. They say no thank you to this development. Deswood Tome is with us, special advisor to the president of the Navajo Nation. He's supporting the development there, the Escalade, the tramway, and for that matter more at Tusayan, the housing and shopping and so forth. Kevin Fedarko is with us, longtime river guide on the Colorado in the canyon, author of the terrific book The Emerald Mile. We'll hear a little on Derek Jeter leaving the world of baseball later in this hour. But lots of people, Kevin, Renee, Deswood, responding to your conversation about the Grand Canyon. Let me go to Charlotte, North Carolina, and Julie. Julie, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I agree with Renee Yellow Horse. No mortal man created this magnificent masterpiece. It doesn't need man. Man needs it. It needs to be preserved. It's sacred, and we need to stay out of it.
And what about the argument that it would bring jobs for Navajo people at the eastern end of the canyon?
Well, I think anyone looking into the situation would agree that you can see both sides. But I think we've developed the heck out of almost everything that we can. I think the Grand Canyon is one of nature's and our creator's most precious gifts to us and to nature, and I think we just need to leave it the way it is.
Julie, I appreciate your call. Let me get one more right here. Fred in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Fred, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. Yes, I fully agree that the Grand Canyon should be considered sacred, and I think it should be considered sacred to the people of the entire planet. I think that the development is only going to stress the environment, especially as far as water is concerned, and that's going to cause other things to have to be constructed and developed. And it would just indicate how crass we are towards things of such beauty, the magnitude of something like the Grand Canyon. I wish, I hope, I pray that it doesn't happen. I really do.
Fred, I appreciate your call. Deswood Tome, respond. You say that there'll be a walkway. People won't technically be walking on sacred ground. But you can hear, Deswood, and you must have heard this before, many Americans seeing something sacred in a larger sense here, that they don't want to give up for a few jobs.
We are not choosing to develop the Grand Canyon. We are choosing to develop Navajo Nation land that sits on our side right up to the boundary of the canyon, which is the high water mark in the river. So from that point going east is Navajo Nation land. I do want to add that the community of Gap, by the way, has passed local legislation to support this project.
So are you saying with that it's none of your business to the rest of the United States and the world? It's Navajo land. If we want a tramway, that's it?
I'm saying that if Americans choose to develop their area, Navajo Nation and Navajo people can make a decision, a sovereign decision, to develop what belongs to us.
Renee Yellowhorse, there's been a vote by the local people, says Deswood. They want it. It's their land. It's sovereign. End of story.
And what Deswood doesn't share is there are two other resolutions that were previous to the resolution he's speaking about. Both voted to not support the Escalade project, one by 50-0 vote. And the one that did pass passed by 7 votes, and it was illegal. It was contentious. They had police there. I was there. My vote was not counted. The resolution passed by 7 votes. They didn't count my vote. It would have passed by 6 votes. But there was also other people's votes who weren't counted. An esteemed elder was taken out by the police, and her vote was not counted. So for him to stand on just that one resolution, and it was illegal in all aspects. And that's what we've come to educate all of the people, that just as the Tucson developers have taken over their councils, also in Bottoway Gap Chapter, these developers, these so-called developers, they don't even always own a business. They're political consultants. They've managed to stock the chapter and the committees with people who support the project. There is nothing out there now. There's no Escalade. There is no hotels. It is still pristine, and that's the way we want to keep it.
Aaron in Detroit, Michigan. Aaron, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I'll be brief. It would be a travesty for us to allow that Pandora's box of profit to open up in a natural wonder like the Grand Canyon. We know from our own immediate history, anything that we allow to be opened up for a profit motive, it ends up being consumed by the competition for profit, and it will end the Grand Canyon as we know it.
Aaron, what do you say to Deswood Tomb, who says, look, you Americans have developed all over this country where it's yours. This is ours. Rene says it's by a narrow margin, but he says, nevertheless, we got the go-ahead. It's ours, and we want to do it. Back off.
Okay, and that's why I pay taxes to the federal government, to protect me and my interests. You know, they pass laws in other countries to protect their interests, and we have passed laws to protect our interests. You know, I'm sorry that you feel like you had an opportunity to make money off of something that belongs to us. And the Grand Canyon belongs to us, not only as land, but as a entity. It belongs to the American people, and we shouldn't let them just rob it for profit.
Yeah, Aaron, I appreciate your call. Kevin Fedarko, this gets into sensitive territory where the us kind of breaks down, because this is Navajo land. As Deswood says, they have sovereignty here, but Renee points to divisions, fissures within the Navajo community, Kevin.
Well, I think, Tom, part of what you're hearing from Renee Yellowhorse right now is a testament to the methodology that Mr. Tome and his associates are using to push this project through. This is extraordinarily divisive. They've gone onto the reservation, identified fault lines within communities, impoverished communities that are already suffering from enormous economic devastation. And they are exacerbating those differences in a way that is extraordinarily painful. Mrs. Yellowhorse has family members who do not speak to her, people in her neighborhood who do not speak to her. And as far as Mr. Tome's point about the reservation having the right to do whatever it wants on the reservation, I would remind him that the Navajo reservation does not exist on its own planet. It directly abuts the crown jewel of America's national park system. And the Navajo are actually bound to act in consultation with the national park system on issues that involve or are incursions into the Grand Canyon. And I think you're hearing from some of your listeners just how profoundly offensive this idea is. The final point I'd like to make, and I think in some ways this is the most important one, no one is disputing the right of the Navajo to engage in economic development. It is not a question of if or whether, but how and when the Navajo develop. And I think that there are far better projects. There are far better ways of approaching this. Ones that do not involve a group of carpetbaggers coming in, white carpetbaggers from Scottsdale and Phoenix, and setting up a project which will benefit primarily themselves and do harm to almost everyone else that is involved. And I think that it would be in the interest of Mr. Tome to consider the notion that there's an entirely different way of pushing forward economic development in this area that's consonant with and harmonious with the landscape itself.
Deswood Tome, I'll come to you with that. One call, if I may, first, Cindy in East Haddam, Connecticut. Cindy, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I've been listening very intently to the discussion. My husband and family lived in Gallup, New Mexico for 2.5 years. In fact, my husband was a chief medical director of the Gallup Indian Medical Center. Years later, 20 years later, we actually floated the canyon. And on either side of us was the 2 billion year-old rock. It is unbelievable. It is something that we and our family will never forget. And then we hiked 10 miles out of the canyon. If one wants to really experience the canyon, it is not by taking a tram down to it.
But Cindy, the developers say not everybody is capable of hiking down or going down on donkeys. Some people would never see it without this.
Well, then maybe Las Vegas could build a replica of it as they did of the Eiffel Tower in Las Vegas. It would serve no purpose. And I ask this question, what beautiful natural monument or phenomena has been helped and improved by man's encroachment? Let's cite the caves of Lascaux in France, where years ago people were allowed to see the first prehistoric drawings on the walls, which I did see when I was a teenager and I went to France.
Yeah, you're making Teddy Roosevelt's point, man can only mar it, he said. And we hear it, Cindy. Deswood Tome, it comes back to this, that there's some things which are so grand, so special, they should not be marred by commercial development. And please don't do it here, you hear American countrymen saying.
I've been listening to what your callers are saying. Again, I want to remind you that we're doing this on Navajo Nation land. We're not interfering with the canyon itself. We're doing it on what was given to us and what actually is aboriginally ours. That's the way we're doing it.
What about Kevin's point? He says it's carpetbaggers. It's investors, white investors from Phoenix and Scottsdale.
I don't call Albert Hale, Jennifer Talaman, and also Eunice So carpetbaggers. They are part of the partnership. They are enrolled tribal members. They are people who are entrepreneurial that want to see development, and those are our Navajo people.
Renee Yellowhorse, what do you think will happen here? Will this development proceed, or do you think it will be stopped, Renee?
My hope is that it will be stopped, that the world's outcry to the desecration of such a holy place will be heard, and that the Bottoway Gap chapter, the Bottoway people, my people, the people that are going to be directly affected, my families, my aunties, that their voices can be heard on this wider scope, and that they won't fall on the deaf ears of Lamar Whitmer, Albert Hale, and the partners.
Kevin Fidarko, we've just got 10 seconds. Which way is this leaning at the moment, Kevin?
I honestly don't know. I think it's going to depend on how many people stand up and identify what is a fact. This is a desecration and a travesty. The notion of delivering 10,000 people a day to the bottom of the Grand Canyon and not having any effect on it is absurd.
Kevin Fidarko, author of The Emerald Mile, Deswood Tome, special advisor to the president of Navajo Nation, Renee Yellowhorse, with the group Save the Confluence that says no to the development. I want to thank each of you for being with us this hour, letting us really understand more deeply a piece of what's going on in this consideration around a national treasure. Thanks to all three of you. We'll go out of here with a little of the Grand Canyon Suite from Leonard Bernstein in the New York Philharmonic. In a moment, another monument, much smaller, much more human, but still, baseball great Derek Jeter wrapping up his final season. Deswood, Renee, Kevin, thanks to each of you. This is On Point. The Grand Canyon has been around for millions of years. Five-time World Series champion Yankee shortstop Derek Jeter has been playing Major League Baseball for 20. Much shorter time, but now he's wrapping up his final season. Filmmaker and sports fan Spike Lee says he means to baseball what Michael Jordan meant to basketball. Legendary sports writer Roger Angel, who's 93 now, has been covering baseball for more than 50 years and watching Jeter for a long time. Here he reads for us from his essay in the New Yorker magazine, So Long, Jeet.
This is Derek Jeter's 20th and final September. 20-odd more games and less than 100 at-bats remain to be added to his franchise record. At this writing of 2,731 and 11,137. He's not having a great year, but then neither are the Yanks, who trail the Orioles by 9 games in the American League East and are 5.5 games short of qualifying for that tacky, tacked-on new second wildcard spot in the postseason. It's been a blah baseball year almost everywhere, and come to think of it, watching Derek finish might be the best thing around. I'll settle for one more inside-out line drive double to deep right. The Jeter blue plate that's been missing of late. It still astounds me. Derek's brilliance as a hitter always felt fresh and surprising for some reason. And here it comes one more time. The pitch is low and inside, and Derek pulling back his upper body and tucking in his chin as if avoiding an arriving number four train, now jerks his left elbow and shoulder sharply upward while slashing powerfully down and through the ball, with his hands almost grazing his belt. His right knee drops and twists, and the swing, opening now, carries his body into a golf-like lift and turn that sweetly frees him while he watches the diminishing dot of the ball headed toward the right corner. What? You can't hit like that. Nobody can. Do it again, Derek. It's sobering to think that in just a few weeks, Derek Jeter won't be doing any of this anymore and will be reduced to picturing himself in action just the way the rest of us do. On the other hand, he's never complained, and he's been so good at baseball that he'll probably be really good at this part of it too.
New Yorker writer Roger Angel reading from his essay, So Long, Jeet, saying goodbye to the retiring Derek Jeter. You can find a link to his full essay at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.